Second Court of Appeals.
Thank you.
It's not the leaky rowboat it might appear.
It was weedy.
Your panel today is to my right, Justice Sue Walker, to my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dofino. Although we have other cases set for submission on brief, you are the only case set for oral submission today, so you'll be the whole show. Megan?
The court will now call Samache versus Town of Northlake. Ms. Rosalind Tibbett to argue for appellant, and Ms. Janet Bernardi to argue for appellant.
Let me test the microphone. May it please the court. This is a governmental immunity case where there are really two central issues. The first issue is whether sufficient facts were pled to such that to invoke the court subject matter jurisdiction by alleging property damage and personal injuries arising from the use of a patrol car. And second, whether the town proved as a matter of law no causal nexus between the use of the patrol car and the resulting damages and injuries. I'm Rosalind Tippett, and my clients are the appellants Samchai Ceremony and Andrew Terrell Bogus. They were two gentlemen who were riding motorcycles on the date of October 7, 2007, on Interstate 35 in the town of Northlake. On that day, Officer McGregor had observed two individuals riding motorcycles, not my clients, but different individuals, who were driving erratically, popping wheelies and such, and he attempted to make a...
Okay, can you clarify one thing for me?
Yeah, sure.
When he stopped, how much of the roadway did he block, or did he not block any of the roadway?
Your Honor, the best evidence that reveals that Officer McGregor blocked one lane of the road, that he pulled from the access road onto the freeway at speeds reaching 118 miles per hour, crossed over the center paved median marked by a solid white stripe, and then brought his car to a stop in that first lane, thereby blocking traffic.
The inside lane.
Pardon me, I didn't hear.
The inside lane, the lane nearest the center stripe or center?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. That first lane he came upon.
And does the record reflect how many lanes there were?
Your Honor, I did not recognize that in the record. We do know that there were at least two lanes because after the roadblock occurred, within what the record appears to show as little as 4 seconds, Mr. Bogus approached the scene, approached this impromptu roadblock, and swerved to the left-hand lane, which was not blocked, Your Honor. However, by pulling over that way, Mr. Ceremony, who was driving a motorbike in that lane, wrecked with that officer's motorbike, or with that appellant's motorbike. So there was a collision. It occurred between the two motorbikes. There was not contact with Officer McGregor's vehicle. But the impact did occur within two car lengths of the vehicle. The town of Northlake filed a plea to the jurisdiction, and that plea to the jurisdiction was granted. That was error based upon, in this court, as you know, reviews subject matter jurisdiction cases, questions of law, de novo. So the trial court was in error when they granted that plea to the jurisdiction for two reasons, because both facts were pled that invoked governmental waiver of immunity under the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, Texas Tort Claims Act. And not only were those facts pled, that also the government entity did not meet its burden to conclusively prove that the accident was not caused by the actual use or operation of a motor vehicle, the patrol car, in this instance. Turning to the waiver facts, were they pled? What was required to be pled under the Texas Tort Claims Act? Actually, pleadings are to be construed liberally in favor of conferring jurisdiction. And the court looks to the allegations in the pleadings for this purpose, accepts them in true, and construes them in the favor of the pleader. the pleadings just basically had to show or to allege that Officer McGregor was using his vehicle when he caused the accident and the damages that resulted. So if you turn to clerk's record at 270, that's where the second amended petition is and where the allegations are set forth. The allegations, and just to, I'll summarize them basically, but the, were that the officer engaged in a high-speed chase, pulled the car into the highway in front of the motorcycles, slammed on his brakes, blocked the path. There were also allegations of things he failed to do. Failed to yield the right-of-way, failed to operate his motor vehicle in a prudent manner, failed to timely turn on his lights and sirens. I noted that in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice versus Miller, Texas Supreme Court case out of 2001, Justice Hecht, in a concurring opinion, recognized it's difficult to distinguish a condition or use of the property from non-use for purposes of waiver, but he said allegation that property directly involves an injury is generally sufficient to survive a plea.
Is there a difference between property and motor vehicle?
There really isn't. I mean, either one. Under the Texas Tort Claims Act, we've specifically cited the waiver under 101.021 A and B. Property, governmental immunity is a governmental unit is liable for property damage, personal injury, and death proximately caused by the wrongful act or omission of the negligence of an employee acting within the scope of his employment if property damage, personal injury, or death arises from operation or use of a motor-driven vehicle, and the employee would be personally liable to the claimant according to Texas law. In sum, on the first prong, there are failures alleged, but there are also true affirmative acts in using this motor vehicle that are alleged that are sufficient to allege a cause of action that gets us past the immunity. It gets us to the waiver under the Texas Tort Claims Act. So we meet that first prong. But going to the second critical issue in this case, and that is, did the government meet its burden? And that burden is to show through conclusive evidence that the injuries did not arise from and were not caused by the use of this motor vehicle. I've looked, and it's been cited by several courts that used the words operation and use were never defined by the legislature. The courts have kind of had to come up with a working framework for that. And the Texas Supreme Court has defined operation as doing or performing of a practical work, and use as to put or bring into action or service to employ for or to apply to a given purpose. It's pretty broad and it's pretty vague. However, it does apply in this case because the town's only evidence that they came forward with to try to show there was no use that was the causal nexus of the injuries was the fact that there wasn't an impact with the officer's vehicle and that the patrol car was stopped at the time of the accident and that there was what they said an 8 to 14 second lapse in time. I submit to you that the reporters or that the supplemental clerk's record shows it could have been as little as a 4 second lapse in time between the time the officer stopped and the time the accident occurred. But these facts do not conclusively prove the lack of use or the lack of causal nexus. There is no rule. There's just no rule that says no impact means no use or no impact means no cause. There are several cases, several of which I cite, where there was no impact with the governmental motor vehicle, but yet there was still use and causal nexus. I'll cite to you to the case of Austin Independent School District versus Gutierrez. That's an Austin Court of Appeals case, but that was a school bus driver. The driver let the child off the bus. The child crossed in front of the bus, and the driver honked and then failed to activate any signals. And those things led the child to cross the street. Well, that child was hit. And the court said, well, that is use of a motor vehicle, the school bus, that approximately caused those injuries for the purposes of governmental immunity analysis. There was no contact with that school bus ever. But that's the same thing in Contreras versus Lufkin ISD, another school bus case where a child was injured getting off the school bus. The school bus, there was no contact with the school bus, but yet it was used and caused the accident for purposes of governmental immunity. Similarly, in Travis versus City of Mesquite, Texas Supreme Court, 1992.
Well, now, in those cases, was it the failure of the school bus to do something? Turn the lights on, flip down the stop sign on the side. So it was the non-use of the bus, right?
Right.
Here, you aren't alleging that the police car didn't do something. He didn't turn on his lights. He didn't park at an angle on the road. It just sat there. So isn't that somewhat distinguishable?
Actually, Justice McCoy, it's pretty similar because we're alleging both that the officer did some things. He pulled out over the median. He was going at 118 miles an hour. He stopped quickly, blocked traffic, but he also failed to turn on the lights. There's some failures in there. Failed to keep a proper lookout in doing that. Well, for instance,
but you also planned failure to turn on the lights.
Right. Yes, we
so
did.
You would analogize that to the school bus, that part to the school bus.
I would, because in that case, there were two things. The school bus driver honked, did something, and the school bus driver failed to turn on their signals. And it was both of those things, the court said, that constituted use. So it's very similar. I think it's important here to distinguish two cases that the appellee brings up in their brief, that they've tried to analogize these facts to those in the Hillis, City of Dallas versus Hillis case, as well in this as the Texas Department of Public Safety versus Gershom case. Hillis is the case, if you recall, where a police officer for the City of Dallas was engaging in a high-speed chase of a motorcycle driver. The motorcycle driver is in front by at least 10 seconds. The motorcycle driver in front essentially runs off the high five in Dallas and injures himself. And the police officer in the city was sued. They said there that the causal nexus was broken because the police officer was so far back, his dashboard camera couldn't even record the accident, only some flashes of light. And what was key there, and the court said, that the chain of causation was broken when injury most directly results from an injured person's own decision. The motorcycle driver's in front. He has decisions. He can slow down. He can turn off. He has a lot of things that he can decide to do. In this case, the chain of causation is not broken because Mr. Ceremony and Mr. Boggs didn't have decisions. All they could do in these situations was react. Similarly, in the Gershom case that I mentioned, that was the case where there was a police officer pulled over on the side of the road with lights on. The claimant was driving, saw those lights, and knew he needed to either move over, or as the evidence showed, that the law in Texas was you have to either move over to the other lane or slow down 20 miles below the speed limit. He chose to move over and ran into a disabled vehicle in Gershom. He alleged that the use of that officer's vehicle was the cause of his accident. And then again, the court there said that the plaintiffs had two alternatives, to move over to one lane or reduce speed, and he didn't take the other alternative that he could have. Again, he had alternatives, and that's what broke the chain of causation.
But that car was on its shoulder, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And I think that even goes even further to why that seemed too attenuated to have caused that accident. Essentially, because, just to wrap up, we both pled facts that are sufficient to invoke the court's subject matter jurisdiction through a waiver of governmental immunity, and because the town has not met their burden to conclusively prove that there was no use of the vehicle that approximately caused these injuries, that the trial court was incorrect and in error. And we ask that this court reverse the judgment of the trial court and remand this case back for further proceedings.
May it please the court. My name is Janet Spignardi, and I'm here today representing the town of Northlake, the appellee in this matter. This is an appeal where the trial court correctly granted the town's plea to the jurisdiction. Today I'd like to focus on the reasons that the town's immunity from suit has not been waived, and I'd like to look at the pleadings and the facts to discuss the legal reasons why. But before we get to the legal arguments, I'd like to clarify some of the facts because I think it's very crucial to the court's analysis of this case. As you know, you do review these de novo, and the Supreme Court has said that you look at a plea to the jurisdiction. When you look at a plea, you look at the pleadings and the facts were necessary to resolve the jurisdictional evidence. And so here, the jurisdictional evidence is crucial. And the supplemental clerk's record at 2, at the video from the police officer's in-car, in-dash camera video, shows that the officer was stopped in a lane of traffic on the left-hand side of the road on I-35 freeway. It was dark. It was at night in October 2008. He was attempting to stop, yes, two other motorists who were violating the law, but what we also know from the testimony of one of the appellants in this case, Andrew Terrell Bogus, is that he, too, was speeding that night. He was violating the law. Not only was he speeding, he was riding a motorcycle without an M certification on his driver's license in violation.
What does that have to do with your jurisdiction?
What is the motorcyclist negligence?
Yes.
Because the motorcycle driver, if we're going to talk about his decisions and what he could have done differently, if we're talking about, as the appellant would argue, is that her clients did not have any decision. They were just forced to react. But what you are faced with is an inexperienced motorcycle driver who should not have even been on the road that night.
Doesn't that go to the merits of your case as opposed to jurisdiction?
I believe, Justices, that it actually does go to the jurisdictional issue because what you have is someone, when we're talking about what they were forced to do and whether or not that the city's or the town's immunity has been waived, you have to look at what happened, what actually happened. And here the driver could have – he had other options. He could have slowed down. He could have stopped instead of just trying to swerve into another lane.
He could stop.
Yes. Well, if you look at the...
Do we have an expert that says he could have stopped? Where did that come from?
Well, what we do have is that the appellants were actually 32 feet behind the police car and another motorcycle rider, Matthew Long, who did stop his motorcycle. He was closer to the police vehicle, saw the lights come on, saw the car stop in front of him, and he was able to successfully stop his vehicle. He had more time to do so. That is possible.
Okay.
That is possible.
Again, I don't see what any of this has to do with whether or not it arises from the operation or use or lack thereof of a motor vehicle.
Well, if you would like, I can get directly to those arguments. The vehicle of the officer was not in use at the time this accident occurred. He had stopped his vehicle on the road. He had turned on his emergency lights before he stopped. That is shown in the video. He had gotten out of his car at the time the accident had occurred. He wasn't even in his car anymore. He was out of the vehicle, and he had stopped the other motorcyclist, Matthew Long, in effecting the traffic stop as he was intending to do.
Well, isn't that the use? The vehicle is being used, correct?
Not as to...
Of a
different motorist potentially, but the causation there is broken because what you had in this circumstance was that the officer had intended to and did in fact effectuate a traffic stop of one motorcyclist, and that happened several seconds before the other motorcyclists who were further behind come along. One of them was in the left lane, the other one was in the right lane, and the testimony of the appellant, as you'll see in the reporter's record, states that he was coming along and he was continuing down his lane of traffic, basically down the center line of the freeway, And when the officer got out of his vehicle and opened his car door, then he decided to all of a sudden swerve into the other lane of traffic. He had seen the police vehicle before that moment. He knew it was there.
Didn't the city do an investigation and find that Officer McGregor improperly used his vehicle to block the roadway?
There was a police report, Justices, that was done after this accident. Those were not evidence before the court on the plea, and I would submit that they're not properly before the court today because the city filed objections to those reports on the basis that they contained expert opinions and that by individuals who had not been qualified to give expert testimony, and the court sustained the city's objection and did not admit those evidence.
How about it sounds like opening the car door actually what caused the accident, which is the use of the vehicle.
What actually caused the accident was when Mr. Boggett swerved into the left-hand lane and he got hit from behind. But that cause is too geographically and temporally attenuated from the accident. But he wasn't right on top of him because if you look at the video and you look at the seconds, what you see is the officer gets into the right-hand lane of traffic. He slows down, turns on his emergency lights. He stops. You see a group of motorcycles pass him in the left-hand lane. You see a few more seconds elapse. You see another group of motorcycles pass him in the left-hand lane.
Don't you mean the right-hand lane?
No, he was in the right-hand lane. He was in the right lane. And
the left-hand lane.
No, he was not on the interior. No, he was still in his lane.
I know, but he's on the right-hand side of the freeway.
That's correct.
He opened his door toward overpassing traffic.
Just so I clarify, because I'm not sure I'm understanding.
He's on the right-hand side. The door from the driver's side.
But it did not go into the left-hand lane. It didn't go into the left-hand lane, because all those motorcycles are passing in the left-hand lane after his car door opens.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yes.
If the motorcyclist would have hit the police car, then do you think that there's a waiver of immunity?
Which motorcyclist? The appellants here?
Yes.
No. Because I think, although I think non-contact in this case is very crucial, and I think if you look at the Texas Supreme Court decision in Leloux versus Hampshire Fannett Independent School District, the Supreme Court has said that even though the Tort Claims Act doesn't say whose use is required, it does have to be they think that the plausible reading of the Tort Claims Act is that the use has to be that of the governmental employee. And so in cases where it wasn't the driver or the employee of the government that hit someone, the courts have consistently found that that is non-use of property.
Police car is completely blocked all three lanes of traffic right in front of the motorcycle. The motorcycle slides up and hits the police vehicle. You're going to tell me that that's not a use
What I would say, Your Honor, and your justices, to that is that you have to look at the facts of every case. And it just depends on the facts. I'm not going to say never, but I'm also, you know, you have to look at the individual facts. Here you have a completely different lane of traffic. I'm sorry?
I thought we looked at the pleadings.
Well, you also look at the jurisdictional evidence in addition to just looking at the pleadings.
How do you distinguish the bus cases?
Well, I think the
bus
But the bus driver was in his vehicle. He was using equipment on the vehicle at the time that occurred.
What distinguished for me what makes a difference if the police officer or the bus driver is in the vehicle?
Well, because then that has a likelier tendency to show that the vehicle is being used at that time. Here we have a situation where the vehicle wasn't being used. The officer was out of the vehicle. He wasn't even in the car.
So the officer stayed in his vehicle, then the very same thing would have happened.
Not necessarily, no, because I think in the Grisham case, the DPS trooper was in his vehicle in the right hand and the shoulder on the right and the right hand shoulder, and very similar to the case here, those plaintiffs made the argument that they had been kind of funneled into another lane by that vehicle being there, and the court looked at that and said no, there was not use of the vehicle that actually caused the injury, and I'd like to kind of talk about actual causation, because that's the standard we're looking at here. It is a heightened standard under the Tort Claims Act, because we start with the guiding principle that the waiver of immunity is very limited in only certainly narrowly defined circumstances. And so you have to meet the actual requirements. One is that the use must have been there, and second, you have to have actual causation. And what the court in Hillis, in the Dallas Court of Appeals, said in Hillis is that causation can be broken geographically, temporally. And so what you have here is the officer is in the right-hand lane of traffic, affecting a traffic stop of one motorcyclist. And in the meantime, all these other motorcyclists pass him, and someone else behind, 32 feet behind him in another lane of traffic, two motorcyclists collide with each other. That does not show that the use of the property actually caused those injuries. The appellant, Bogus, during his testimony at the plea hearing in the reporter's record, in the second reporter's record, conceded that he was hit from behind by Saramani. That is not in dispute. There are very few undisputed facts here, and the appellants even concede that as well. There was no contact with the vehicle. It occurred at least 32 feet behind the officer. It was in a different lane of traffic. The vehicle was stopped. The officer was out of the car, and all these other motorcycles went successfully past the officer.
All right. If I look at the sketch of the scene, it appears that there are two lanes going in one direction, basically north.
That's correct.
And two lanes going the other direction.
That's correct.
It shows McGregor's unit as being either on or slightly over the lane line. If he opens the door is definitely going to go into the lane of oncoming traffic. And it, as I understand the record, he was using the vehicle to block traffic.
He wasn't using it to block traffic, Justice. He was using it to effect a traffic stop. If he had decided to effect a traffic stop in the middle of the road because of the dangerousness of the actions of someone, he wasn't using it to block someone. He was using it to effect a traffic stop.
Okay, so
what happened was he blocked traffic.
In that lane, correct. But that's why you see motorcycles going around, and that's why Mr. Long stopped his motorcycle. And what we also know that is different from what that diagram shows is that the accident between their number 3 and 4 in that diagram, I believe, the accident of those individuals did not occur in the right lane of traffic. What we established through the jurisdictional evidence of the testimony of Appellant Bogus is, and looking at the video, which this report was made before the video, what we established from those things is that the accident actually occurred in the left-hand lane, 32 feet back. It actually takes the officer some time to get to them to find out if they're okay. So it was, and there is a lapse of time. It's more than 4 seconds because Appellant Bogus conceded in his testimony that the officer was already out of the vehicle at the time he had his collision.
McGregor prepared the report, the incident report.
He prepared a supplemental incident report. Yes.
It has the sketch.
No, he did not prepare the one with the sketch. That was prepared by another officer, and that was struck by the trial court as being inadmissible.
I'm curious why you would have somebody that was not an expert, unqualified to offer opinions, do the investigation.
Well, I don't know what the town of North Lake's capacity, I don't know what sort of, you know, qualification or experts, Justice, that they have at their disposal when there's a pretty small town, and so when they have an emergency or a crash come in and they have to go investigate it. I don't know if they have an expert accident reconstructor available at their disposal to come investigate. So they're a pretty small police department, and I'm sure they just used who was on hand, which was the sergeant at the time. And
based on it, they fired McGregor, right?
I'm sorry?
Based on his investigation, they fired McGregor?
That he was ultimately violated for violating the city's policy
by
chasing motorcycles.
Traffic.
Yes, and by chasing motorcycles. He was ultimately terminated for a violation of the city policy. But that was also struck by the court because it was not relevant. What happened after the fact of the accident was not relevant to the issues in this case. The issues in this case are this incident and what happened. And in conclusion, when you look at the video in the supplemental clerk's record, and you especially read the testimony of the appellant Bogus, which is very telling, it's in the reporter's record, pages 9, beginning at page 9 through 26, what you find is that the officer had used his car to effect a traffic stop, had stopped, was in fact out of the car, and in another lane of traffic, some 32 feet behind, there is an accident. That is not sufficient to waive the city's immunity or the town's immunity based on no use of the property, and there is no proof of actual causation. Thank you.
As for the evidence not being before the court, the evidence wasn't struck. The second reporter's record on page 29 shows that the trial court sustained the narrow objection to the qualifications of Lieutenant Harpel and Officer Dowell to give accident reconstruction opinions. There's no doubt about that. But there's nowhere in the record where any of these documents were ever struck, and we certainly haven't put them forth to establish proximate cause. That's not our burden. It was the town's burden to come forth with conclusive evidence of a lack of a causal nexus. Now, just to clarify a couple of the facts, there was an issue brought, or the fact brought up that Mr. Bogus was speeding, and then somehow that gave him a decision or a choice. But the record actually reflects in his testimony that he said that the miles per hour of the road, the speed limit was 65, and he was traveling either that or 5 miles over. This is not a situation where it should be characterized as that he was just speeding out of control. The testimony was just a little bit more conservative than that. And it really doesn't matter, because that really goes to more of a comparative negligence argument that isn't pertinent in the immunity context. As far as the factual issue for clarification as to when the lights came on, when Officer McGregor turned on his lights, your honors look at the video, you can't see when the lights come on. In fact, there's a statement on the video by Officer McGregor, you can't see on my video when the lights come on. You can't tell that, but what you can tell is the moment he stops and the moment there's commotion and then there's wrecks. And I contend that, putting all advocacy aside, it's somewhere between 4 seconds or 14 seconds. But whatever it is, it doesn't matter. All of that is very temporally tight, and it does happen very quickly, and that's why Mr. Bogus and Mr. Saramani did not have alternatives, did not have choices other than to simply react. Ultimately, it's the same standard as a summary judgment standard in a plea of the jurisdiction. If there are fact issues about whether or not there was a use of this vehicle and a causal nexus, the plea of the jurisdiction should not be granted. And there were fact issues, and that's why the trial court's judgment and order should be reversed. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We do appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted. We appreciate you coming here.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas to y'all, and you're excused, and this court will be adjourned.
Yeah, I thought y'all did a really good job of arguing. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Particularly under my withering question.
They warned us about you, though.